nobody should really be selling you an antivirus product anymore. If that's what you've got as your cyber defense, you're in big trouble. Mm-hmm. The world has moved on. Mm-hmm. So endpoint detection and response is the buzzword. Mm-hmm. That's a fairly broad field as well, but that's a key security control, modern cyber defense.
In a world where every device is communicating, we're no longer concerned only with connection, but protection. Welcome to Securely Connected Everything, your gateway to understanding the intertwined worlds of connectivity and security. We have a great conversation today, so stick around and we'll jump right in. Today we're going to be talking around managed cybersecurity services from Oro, and we're joined by Chris Bailiff, the CTO for the cyber division. Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
Before we start, are you able to briefly introduce yourself and your current role within Oro, and maybe describe your journey to that role?
Absolutely. So, yeah, Chris Bailiff. I'm the CTO for the Cyber Services Division in Oro. My job really is looking after the technology platforms, the security services and products and dependencies. Mm-hmm. However, as long-time IT security industry technical lead, I basically, and the escalation for every other branch of the division. So I occasionally help with incident response, consulting, managed services design. So yeah, I'm happy to be asked questions on anything, as long as the answer is technical.
Yeah, fair enough. You know, just for a bit of context for people listening or watching the show, is around eSecure was an acquisition by Oro, became part of Oro's cyber. Obviously, there was the Right acquisition, which forms the other component of the cyber business. But just for listeners, you know, can you help explain the difference between the two businesses? Your eSecure was very focused on one vertical and market, and maybe talk about the other if you can.
So eSecure, pure play cyber for that entire period. Slightly before I joined, was a network company. They made a decision to pivot to purely cyber in about 1998, and not really offering products, offering managed services, but mostly in regulated markets, so large financials, telecom, some government, and then on joining the Oro Group, basically becoming the cyber specialists. Mm-hmm. Riot has joined the Oro family from a background of a spread of services. Mm-hmm. But again, the cyber division, quite a broad range of customers, very Queensland-based. So that's a nice fit. We're kind of Sydney, Melbourne-based and a complementary set of technology platforms. So we're basically aligning and merging those operations as quickly and seamlessly as we can at the moment.
Great.
That's been great to sort of see some of the customers from the Riot side.
Yes.
You've got a few customers that have got a much larger footprint than we've experienced before, which has been good. I know that there's customers with more than 100,000 assets under management.
Yes.
That's quite exciting.
Yeah. Look, absolutely. But what it means across the two is we have a holistic, opportunity to help customers with their cyber journey, anything from strategy consult to this full suite of services. And you touched on really focusing on managed services. So, from your perspective, what role does a managed security service provider, fit? How does it fit, I should say, into today's kind of cybersecurity landscape?
I think a managed security services provider as opposed to a managed services provider, we're trying to blur that distinction, I guess, within the Oro Group, is very useful in terms of having access to specialist skills and knowledge. There just aren't enough people in the cyber industry for every company to have a team of 20 cyber specialists and all those services. And I think as a managed service provider, especially in Oro's market, those smaller and medium-sized enterprises really haven't had the ability or the resourcing to use those specialist skills, specialist tools and services effectively. without the help of a service provider.
Right, right. Yeah, and we struggle enough getting skills today, right, in the market. So really what you're saying is, you know, brings you a broad range of access to quite a vast set of people and skills that can supplement what you're doing. Because some of our customers have some sort of cyber practice internally. We supplement them in some instances. We're covering, you know, for them as a holistic offering.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't really matter how knowledgeable or experienced you are in the cyber industry these days. You cannot be a specialist in every area.
Yes.
I've given up trying. I have a go, but yes. I've got to accept that there are people who really know a lot more about the detail of every possible aspect.
Yeah.
And you want to make friends with those people or hire those people.
Yes.
So yeah, in today's landscape, you can't be insular and keep everything in house, no matter how hard you try.
Yeah, fair enough. And on that, what are you seeing as from our point of view, MSP point of view, what are you seeing as the major, you know, cybersecurity trends and threats organizations should be most concerned of?
So a big problem is that there is a middle market who have not caught up with cybersecurity yet. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're learning rapidly, mm-hmm. and there's been a lot of recent incidents mm-hmm. and publicity, mm-hmm. but that demand is growing both through incidents mm-hmm. and risk management, but also through compliance and legislation. So obviously the regulatory environment has changed. Sochi Act has expanded into a lot more areas, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And people are now really at director level worrying about these things and asking the questions and prepared to spend the money. So that's probably the biggest driver of the adoption of services.
Yes.
The issue there is you need to make sure that you're getting value for money, mm-hmm. and getting quality services. If you go to your standard managed services provider who basically doesn't have that security specialization, you might be getting a product, but you won't be getting necessarily protection.
Yeah, fair enough. And on that, then, if you think from a customer's point of view, so a great discussion point would be, you know, I can do a quick search and I can find lots of people purporting to be, you know, managed security, managed services. And your point is that you really need to make sure or tease out that they have got the right level of depth of knowledge. Because if we think about the most recent large high profile breaches, you know, are you seeing clients' demands and concerns, you know, significantly shift over the last couple of years after some of these high profile breaches?
Absolutely. I think the compliance is possibly more of a stick than a carrot.
Right.
We're seeing a big increase in the demand all of a sudden for Essential 8 mm-hmm. compliance. Mm-hmm. The Essential 8 model has been updated to now have a maturity management model. So mm-hmm. it was just a list of eight things you do. Mm-hmm. Now there's a maturity level for each of those eight things, mm-hmm. basically one, two, or three. And people are asking for better than level one. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. and that's basically a measurable yardstick. Eight things is not too many to target. We have obviously the CSC 18 for larger organizations, and we have the ASD top four, which is a nice start, but it's mm-hmm. not very ambitious. Mm-hmm. But that, yes, the Essential 8 is now a buzzword. People are coming and asking specifically for compliance with those controls.
Yes.
And at more than the basic maturity level, which is interesting.
Yes.
It's probably important to point out, no matter the organization, the size of the organization, your security services provider can only operate with your cooperation. Mm-hmm. So we have mm-hmm. the joint responsibility model. You can outsource the controls and the assessments and the operations, but the organization still has to own the risk and understand what it is they want to achieve. We do see some organizations less mature who believe that they have purchased security and everything is going to be okay. And it's very difficult sometimes for them to really understand where they have their own level of responsibility,
yes,
and that it's got to be a partnership with your security services supplier.
Yep, that's a good point.
You cannot throw it over the fence.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be a two-way, ongoing communication.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a really, really a collaborative journey, right? But yep. People need to understand that, right? It's not just of now engaging you to deliver a service, which is obviously important, yep. And we have SLAs and all that sort of. But it really is that journey, right? Collaborative journey together. So is, I guess, yep. Your key message there. Yep. So did you see there was no doubt a lot of customer requests around their posture, their health, you know, post some of these large incidents, and no doubt we'll still see a few more over time. Is it the bell curve where people get really worried and they reach out and say, you know, can we double check everything's good? Can we? And now that's trickled off again, you think, because there's been no more breaches, or do you think it's stayed consistent because it's always in the back of their mind?
I don't think it's a bell curve. That there's always something to kick it along a little bit.
Okay.
I don't think people have relaxed.
Okay.
I think I would agree if you're suggesting there's a bit of fear, uncertainty and doubt used in marketing. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Anybody mm-hmm. who's selling you on a horror story, mm-hmm. probably treat with some care. But mm-hmm. If you're having a long-term, two-way relationship with your service provider, you're both adapting to the changing landscape, you're hoping mm-hmm. to be ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
There are new attack types, new threats basically daily. Only some of them make the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's partly almost just fatigue.
Yes.
There are so many crypto locker data breach stories that they don't make page one anymore.
Yes. Yes.
In the SOC, we hear about them almost daily.
Yeah.
But we actually need to then look into exactly what occurred. Are those controls that would have stopped it in place at existing customers? But you can't rely just on the stories in the newspaper anymore.
They're
so many that we're fed up hearing about them.
Yes.
I think it's interesting that the Medibank breach, that was a lot of very sensitive, very personal information.
Yes.
And it was, you know, breached, and Medibank mm-hmm. did definitely, in my opinion, the right thing
mm-hmm.
to not even consider paying the ransom,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, led to legislative changes, and there'll be further ones, I'm sure. I think people realised the world didn't end, that we dealt with that threat.
Yes.
And that's probably a worst case scenario until, in terms of data breach,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to IoT and systems.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably a useful calibration point, as that was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But the world carried on.
Continued, sure. And for those people listening, you mentioned a SOC, and it's, you know, obviously you live in a completely different world to most people. Your whole life is around, and the analysts that work with us are dealing with these incidents all the time. And it's an interesting point you touch on. You're hearing about them every day. And for people, that, you know, the SOC is a security operations center where all these analysts live, and they share and collaborate right on, you know, the customers who are dealing with this pain. We know that landscape has become more competitive. We know that more and more customers, partners are talking to more and more service providers who are trying to build this capability, and if we've got a long heritage. But I'm curious from your perspective as CTO of the cyber practice there is, you know, what are we doing as an organization to ensure we're remaining at the forefront, you know, of cybersecurity solutions, defenses? It's a never-ending game, right?
Absolutely. There's a mixture of drivers for the technology that we use.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, is it effective? Is mm-hmm. that technology working?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody should really be selling you an antivirus product anymore. If that's what you've got as your cyber defense,
mm-hmm.
You're in big trouble.
Mm-hmm.
The world has moved on.
Mm-hmm.
So endpoint detection and response is the buzzword.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a fairly broad field as well, but that's a key security control, modern cyber defense. You have to have a working EDR,
mm-hmm.
and it's a technology and a services problem, people, process, technology.
So with that consideration and what you've just touched on there, what challenges are we facing when we have to protect, you know, multiple customers? We do have a very varied range, you know, with different infrastructure needs. Is that process? How do you handle that?
Partly, yeah, having consistent process no matter what the technology, mm-hmm. fitting all the technologies mm-hmm. into a streamlined mm-hmm. workflow so mm-hmm. that everything gets looked at and mm-hmm. meets the SLA and is investigated mm-hmm. properly.
Mm-hmm.
The big challenge is really scaling
mm-hmm.
in a situation where you have, we call them used to call them false positives. It's a mm-hmm. term I really dislike. Mm-hmm. But if you know, 5% of your alerts are false positives, let's be real, 50% of your alerts are false positives, that is a serious drain as you start to double, triple, raise your number of alerts by an order of magnitude. It's wasted effort. It's draining. Alert fatigue is a biggest problem in SOC staff retention. It's very hard to keep people motivated when what they see is basically noise and they're just investigating the same thing. So that's our number one priority in SOC technology development, is streamlining the workflow and aggressively tuning, and we call them inactionable alerts. Mm-hmm. So we distinguish that from false positive. It may be perfectly accurate from the technology side, but it's something that's actually normal for this customer. Mm-hmm. And you can tell an immature MSP in this space, in that what they do is send you a never-ending stream of the same alert, which you've already said is inaccurate or is normal or is acceptable in our scenario, mm-hmm. and they're mm-hmm. unable to tune that because the rule is applied globally. So that's really a key focus of our engineering and technology, is getting to the root cause mm-hmm. of those inactionable alerts and driving that volume down constantly.
Yeah, fair enough.
And maybe AI's got a place in that kind of thing, you know, looking at trends and patterns.
Yes.
We certainly use the machine learning and the automation to mm-hmm. to help classify those alerts as far as we can. Mm-hmm. By the nature of it, it's those undecided cases that come to a human. Mm-hmm. If it was easy to decide if this is definitely a security attack, it would have been blocked in the first place.
Yes.
Your EDR yes. knows this is a definite attack.
Yes.
It will be blocked. Yes, we would investigate. But preventing is better than detecting.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, if I have a look at the time you've been doing this, right, you've seen a lot of lifecycle, a lot of change, you know, from topologies and connectivity. What are you seeing in relation to threats or our customers? How are we helping them out in relation to, you know, the continuous growth of remote work, obviously off the back of COVID, you know, IoT and cloud? I mean, is that really a different approach or really similar, just a different where the data's stored?
I think it's accelerated the understanding that the perimeter model of the network was dead and buried 15, 20 mm-hmm, years ago, mm-hmm, which has been waiting for everybody to agree. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, COVID sending everyone home really accelerated that, and we did have a burst of people asking for VPNs and testing of remote mm-hmm. access and mm-hmm. what can we do about BYOD devices because we couldn't buy enough PCs for all our staff. So that was sort of a good thing to push the state along. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's got all its challenges, but I think all the challenges of that in terms of people using BYO and the risks from having unpatched machines and not great network security, I think they were there certainly before that diaspora. Mm-hmm. And I think the approach is they're now more packaged and repeatable and we don't have to argue about them as much.
Yep.
I think the benefits of modernizing that infrastructure are there. So the zero trust, attack surface reduction, getting rid of the corporate backbone, and is basically pretty well entrenched in anybody who has attempted to improve their security. Mm-hmm. We still have the traditional model in the traditional smaller and medium enterprises, mm-hmm. and I think it's going to take an incident for many of them to move.
Yes,
unfortunately.
Yes.
So hopefully they're not in our current customer base or the ones that are thinking about that migration.
Yes.
There will be a long tail of people with that traditional model who aren't going to really cope with that incident.
The change. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So. And then, you know, if you think about, you know, a lot of what do you think are the emerging technology from a cyber point of view, or tools, you know, knowing that you look at so many tools all the time, that you're most excited about in cyber?
Currently, I'm super keen and telling anyone who listen that you've got to be moving to FIDO 2 Web mm-hmm. Authn. Mm-hmm. It's what we call fish proof. I mean, mm-hmm. nothing's proof.
No, of course,
but,
of course.
But basically, the basic problem of users giving away their passwords is mm-hmm. completely solved by switching mm-hmm. to Web Authn. it's very buzzword heavy, unfortunately, but that might be, you might know it as Windows Hello, Passkeys. I think Apple is using that branding. YubiKey, Titan, Google Titan Key. The form factors are very variable. The technology is basically a modern refresh of the old smart card idea. That you have a physical thing, be it your phone, an actual key on your key ring, the TPM chip in your laptop, and that is holding your private key, never to be revealed. And that, with strong privacy controls and some new ways of deploying and enrolling those users, that credential is really going to replace passwords. It's called passwordless in some implementations. Microsoft are pushing it as passwordless. You still have a PIN. It's still multi-factor. Or a fingerprint or a face unlock, but there are two multi-factors. But once the user doesn't have a password, no matter how many chocolate bars you give them, they just cannot give it away, no matter what they do.
So you're really excited about that? That's an great evolution, you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, great.
It just solves so many what should be easy problems. We do all that phishing training. When we're relying on people to not get that wrong, and we really ought to be fixing that much more with the technology, and that's the key. If you look again in the Essential 8, maturity level 3, that's really your only option for authentication is a smart card or a security key, as we call them now, FIDO. So that's where the market will have to go if they want to reach maturity level 3. So, yeah, it's great foundational platform.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out, and certainly I've been hearing about it a long time. So thanks for solidifying it for those who are listening. So wrapping up some of our conversation, I guess I'm curious to understand from your perspective, where do you feel managed service providers and managed cyber service providers, heading in the kind of the next five to 10 years? It's a long way out, but if you crystal ball it from your history and where we're going?
Yeah, I think the successful ones will be those who can establish that relationship and survive a purchase cycle. It's not all about the lowest cost. It's about getting an effective service that is flexible and aligns to your changing business. So hopefully we've got a fairly good history of doing that, and we'll continue in the future. I think the job of the MSP is to really get ahead on the technology platforms, the threats, and be informed and ahead of the curve for you on your behalf. You do not want the same service in 3 or 5 years' time as you did when you signed the contract. If you're getting exactly what you've got in your contract SLA, in 5 years' time, you probably won't be happy with that.
Fair enough.
So yeah, we'd definitely look to go above and beyond the minimum service level, shall we say.
Fair enough. As a last one, what would you, if you had to leave the listeners or viewers with one key takeaway, a piece of advice regarding cyber, what would it be?
I think you have to, depends on where you are in an organization and what your decision-making capability is, but I think you have to realize that it's always a joint responsibility, and that you need to put some of your own focus and effort and understanding in to getting a good result out of whatever service or product or implementation or project you're about to take on board. Internalize some of that security decision making and have some opinions before you embark on that journey. You can't just give it all away to someone else. It's a shared responsibility.
Yeah, good point. Chris, thanks very much for your time today. For customers or listeners who want to have a further discussion, obviously Oro.group is the website to go to for our services that we provide, and certainly feel to reach out at any time. Again, appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks, Michael.
No worries.